Welcome to this episode of White Pals, Tales from the Sweepy Up Laundry. I am joined today by the gorgeous Natty Watkins.
How are
you doing? Hi, Jan.
We've just actually been chatting about how long we've known each other, which I knew you through other things before I knew you.
Yeah.
But you've known...
What other things?
I think, like, when you did your podcast was probably the first...
On your radar.
On my radar.
Yeah.
But I know your partner. I'm pretty sure we were at Free House.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. You've known each other a long time.
Long. Way back. Way back. Before... before too much evidence on the internet.
I was only saying the other day how grateful I am that I grew up in a time where there wouldn't be a lot of evidence, like recordings, photos from the wild times, like teenage years.
Yeah.
I did get a phone probably the last year of school, but you couldn't really take pictures. You definitely couldn't take pictures on it. When I was at college, I think you could take some really crappy pictures on the phone. But there's so much life that there wouldn't be any evidence from. And I love that. I'm really grateful for that time.
I think it's a blessing in disguise. Because in your mind, you do rewrite history.
You glaze over the bad parts and you only remember
really
the good.
That was a really amazing night. Probably forgetting some sketchy details.
And
just a bit rose-tinted.
Oh, yeah, of
course. It's on social media. It's there in all of its technical.
And that was back in the times where you were just living the good times for the good times, not for the pictures of it.
There's definitely... Obviously, we're getting ahead of ourselves. You edit. You couldn't help it, especially as women... You know, that's before we get into doing filters and all of this perfectly. You're going to start editing your life from the get-go because you'll change your behaviour.
Absolutely.
There'll be less bouncing on tables, falling over. Do you know what I mean? Funky dance moves that we did.
And you see things that actually, talking about things from social media, but you see them going around on social media. There are videos of like festivals in the 90s and everyone's just dancing like no one's watching. And then there's videos of festivals today and everyone's on their phone. Everyone's recording it, not actually experiencing it.
It's quite depressing. I think I mentioned on previous episodes I saw retro nights advertised like up in Manchester.
What, where they lock your phone away?
Yeah, so they stick love a sticker to put over your camera.
Oh, so they don't actually take it off.
No, they take it off you. Maybe they should, but they put a sticker over it. So over the camera, just get on with it.
Love it.
I quite like that. You're being crossed their minds.
Especially as a teenager, when I would go out, my mum didn't know when I was coming home. Could be days later.
No.
There was no way of contacting me. There was
someone. You got home, like, where have you been?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to know, mum.
Yeah.
And just wouldn't. But it's an interesting state of editing. And I think obviously that walks into everything. Work parties, you come on, there's tales of wild work parties, they've gone. And then work in general.
Yeah.
And the obviously industry is not immune to it. And also it's probably painting the Yachty lifestyle in a lot more glamorous.
Because
obviously if you're working, you're bored, to cheer yourself up, you'll only put the nice ones on Instagram.
I do think the Yachty lifestyle is an Instagram lifestyle.
I didn't feel like mine was.
That's just it. It's very Instagrammable.
We do get to go to some stunning places.
Yeah, you get to go out, take a picture, then go back to work again. You don't actually get to go to these really nice places.
No.
You travel a lot, but do you actually see these places?
There's only a few places where I had, like, proper guest envy. Like, we were in this beautiful bay. I can't remember what Greek island we were, but we pulled in, and the guests, and it was just this crazy-ass Chinese guy. Like, half Chinese, half British. Smoking cigars, eating croissants after having, like, transplants and all sorts of things. He was like made of loads of other people's bodies. But he still smoked his cigars, still ate croissants. And he was the first up and he was getting really annoyed that nobody was up. So he took over the stereo and was blasting out ABBA at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God, who
in
is this guy? I want to know him.
In this bay, this stunning bay of this Greek island. It was beautiful that morning. There'd been dolphins and all sorts of things. Like dolphins.
Yeah.
It was idyllic. And then he got up and it was just really trippy. I was just cracking up and laughing. We were just playing ABBA. Which ABBA song was? But it's just etched in my mind. It's just like playing it. And then obviously when they started to come up from the guest cabin, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But I did have, because they all went swimming after breakfast. And I was just like, oh.
You like to do that?
But yeah, rather than clearing the table, it would be nice to do that. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah.
Quite easy to digress.
Oh, absolutely.
So obviously, you're on our podcast. And the reason why I think it's quite interesting what you've gone on to do next, but your story is quite extensive and long.
It's long. It's long because I've lived longer. I've lived a lot of life.
But you were quite late to the game with the Yachting
University. Which I know you also were a little.
Right?
So I do think there's a lot of value getting into the industry a bit later in life, because I do think it's a little bit of a Peter Pan lifestyle. And if you do, my husband was also in the yachting industry and he got in age 19. And because it is that Peter Pan lifestyle, you just don't really grow up. And I think a lot of these people that get in super young, they go from their parents' house to a boat. You still don't learn how to do, unless you're doing laundry, you don't learn how to do your laundry. You don't learn how to cook for yourself. You don't learn how to pay bills. You get to stay in that permanent state for a long time. Then the industry spits you out again in your 30s and you suddenly got to grow up. So whereas doing it the other way round, I found a lot of value in that. I had a career, a life, a house, a marriage before I got into the industry. So then I went in with that sort of life skills that you bring to the table. And I found that was actually super helpful, although a lot of people were like, oh, you're just too old.
Well,
actually
we can get into how like the ageism in the industry a bit later on. So what were you doing before yachting came on your horizon?
So I didn't even know what yachting was, but initially I've always been, I guess, entrepreneurial. Like, I owned a fitness studio for 17 years. I was teaching, I was a fitness instructor and studio owner. I was teaching aerial hoop, silks and pole dancing way back before it was fashionable.
The hoop as in?
Aerial hoop, yes. And silks and flexibility classes did for adults and children for fun and fitness. The studio was big, a lot of people had heard of it. It was called Tiger Tone Studios on the south coast of the UK. At its peak, we'd have 200 people through the door each week.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone working for me and I got married at 23. I bought a house when I was 21. Yeah, so I had a dog. And then when I turned 30, everything changed. Everything changed. Over the course of 3 years, there wasn't a single aspect of my life that looked the same as it did before. Not a single bit. So it started with the collapse of my marriage, it wasn't a huge fallout or anything. It just grew apart and that's fine.
You got married at 23.
Exactly. Right? The chances of you being the same people early 20s to early 30s is really slim. So just grew apart over time, got married super young. We were married for 8 years. We gave it a good go. So marriage ended, which I wanted to stay in the house. So I had to buy him out the house. And also we both made good money, but he did make more money than me. So once he moved out, that was 70% of the household income walked out the door. So I started to get into that's when I started to get into debt. Then
It's really hard to do that. Like, I, one of my long-term relationships, I remember that obviously we had this flat together, we bought all this furniture together. And for me, I just couldn't lose him and all my bedrooms. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It was like everything. So I think that was me holding on. And in hindsight, exactly the same. I ended up getting into debt to pay him to keep all of the shit. When maybe I should have just...
Yeah, actually, if the shit I didn't care so much about, it was the walls. Well, I was like, I just want the house. You could take virtually everything in it if you really want to. And there was a moment once he'd moved out and we'd arranged that he'd come in and take some bits and pieces while I wasn't there. And I came back after he'd done that and I sat in the middle of my living room, which I'm not joking, had nothing left in it. Nothing. It was a completely bare room. I had the carpets. He'd even taken some of the pictures off the walls. Like, it was empty room. I had curtains and carpet. Just sat there and I was like, at least I've got a house. And I had to pay for the house. 50% of the equity I gave to him. But yeah, that was the beginning of shedding of my old life. Then a year later, my dog died. Horrific, obviously, anyone who's lost a pet. And then a year later, COVID happened, which closed my business. Obviously, COVID hit hard in the March, so my doors closed. I wasn't making any money. I immediately started doing bits and pieces. I immediately started to deliver food for Tesco's, like delivery driver and things like that. But I wasn't anywhere near covering bills, so I was getting more into debt. And
well, obviously the building, I can't imagine that you own the building. Well, rent and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Continues.
Yeah, all everything. And I unfortunately fell through every crack when it came to the government help. It's just the way I'd done accounts and things. It's just the way I was paying myself and blah, blah, blah. It's just meant that I just fell through every crack. So I really didn't get any help. So it wasn't until the October where Tone officially closed. Obviously, it'd been closed the whole time. Then, so by then, I had started seeing my now husband. But it was at that point that huge amounts of debt, we're talking £50,000 worth of debt, it became very clear that I had to move out my house. So I did move out. I got tenants in to cover. So at least I wasn't having to pay the mortgage. So because of that move, I had to sell or get rid of everything. Yeah. So if what I couldn't sell, I gave away and I got down to just 2 suitcases. So I literally shed everything from my old life. I had 2 suitcases of stuff like summer clothes and winter clothes, basically. And then it was like, okay, what's the next move? And my initial thought was, let's run away.
what, in your opinion, what was the hardest thing to let go of?
Moving out of my house. Moving out of my house was the hardest thing. I didn't care too much about stuff. But yeah, moving out. And even because initially when I moved out and I got tenants in, the whole move was, I'll come back one day. I just need someone else to cover this mortgage while I get back on my feet and then I'll move back in. But I just wasn't ready to completely let go of it. I never went back after that, actually.
Yeah, but you don't know that.
Exactly. I needed time to. I needed to do it slowly. I wasn't there. Type to just be like, oh, I don't need this anymore. I needed to do it like in gradual steps. Because I did fight really hard for the house when my marriage ended. I wanted to keep the house. And then only for a few years later to actually end up having to move out of it anyway. It was like quite a hard pill to swallow.
But like, you know, like I said about that situation I found myself in, there's only so much I think your brain can cope with.
Yeah.
Although I was told by family members to just go back to my parents, like literally. Mm-hmm. I was already depressed. I didn't need to be any more depressed. But ultimately, like you say, it ends up being you get pushed into a corner anyway.
Yeah.
But I think that's a process. It happens like that. I do. For a reason.
I do also. I am absolutely sorry, world. But I do think in a way that COVID was sent to just push me to do the things that I did, because had it not have happened, I'd still have my business, I'd still be there. No doubt. And so that I didn't have that thing that pushed me to do, like, I always talk about like the train that's going to hit you. Mine was a big train and it came in the form of COVID to get me to change my life. I'm so grateful for that now. But like I said, I am sorry to the rest of the world that I had to experience that, because I do think it was sent to just get me to do what I needed to do, because I wouldn't have made that step on my own. I just wouldn't. But by then, so I had started, I'd only just started seeing my now husband, and he was in the yachting industry, but he was back because of COVID and things, which gave us an opportunity to properly date and get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And he initially, I do remember, he initially told me what he did, and I was like, yeah, sure. I made it no effort to find out what that really was. Didn't have a clue. And it was a few months in, and he was like, have you ever seen Below Deck? And I was like, no, what's that? He was like, it's just, it's that he explained it like, it's not really what life is like, but it's a good idea of what I used to do, or like what I do. So he put it on, and I was like, oh yeah, this is like the best kind of shit TV I love. Yeah, that you could just binge watch. So binge watch one of the seasons, and I was like, oh, this is what you do. I had no idea that this was a thing. Like I said, he'd said about it, but I was just like, oh yeah, you worked on boats. That's as far as it went in my head.
People don't really get their heads around it very easily.
Yeah. So then, and at this point, I was all up for just running away anyway. And I'd always wanted to do a ski season. I snowboarded anyway. So I was like, I want to go do that. Like, after watching Below Deck, I'm going to go do that. But before that, I need to get a ski season out my system. Like, I want to spend a few months in the mountains. I was already an okay snowboarder. I wanted to get to be a good snowboarder. So first stop, and he wasn't super keen on the ski season because you just don't make any money. And he was used to making very good money. Well, yeah.
So it is the poor relation.
Yeah.
In the traveling set. Although I'd always like, I mean, by the time I found Jossie working in the ski hills, I already knew that it wasn't fab money, because you don't earn that much. Again, it's that room and board scenario.
Yeah.
Like, you get your room and board.
Yeah.
But you will spend money on those nights out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like,
even the limited amount.
Although my experience was very different, because first stop was Val d'Isere. So he agreed to come with me.
Oh, I didn't realize he went.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, we went and did a ski season together. Yeah.
Wow. I can imagine him doing that.
Yeah. So we went to Val d'Isere, but it was still very COVID-y. We were there for 5 months. And I think we did 3 weeks worth of work because we didn't have any guests.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
So we ran a 6-bedroom chalet, hot tub on the veranda, ski in, ski out, beautiful. And so me and him, we lived in this place for 5 months, 3 weeks. I think it was 3 weeks out of the entire 5 months. We shared it with some guests. Otherwise, we didn't work. We snowboarded every day. I got very good at snowboarding. And then I also learned to ski as well, because it's always good to swing both ways.
Although I have to say, I'm
skiing. Oh, yeah.
I did try, but I just didn't have patience. I tried snowboarding. It was just too long on my ass. I'm like, I'm just going to say I'm a skier.
Yeah. So I'm a snowboarder that can ski, and he is a very good skier that can snowboard. It just means that you can pick and choose. I'm not an amazing skier. I can get down a mountain alive. That's all I could do. I can't do anything fancy on the way down. You get down alive.
It's not how it, like, when I learned to ski, but I also roller skated. And when I tried snowboarding, I didn't like my feet being stuck to the same thing. It really, I never skateboarded or anything like that. My brain just could not my feet needed to be independent. Like, they dream that they couldn't.
Yeah, whereas when I had a surf lesson a little while, a few years ago, and the first thing they said, they were like, oh, do you snowboard? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, great, you're going to be fine then. There is not a single thing that's similar. I was not fine. I cannot surf. Like, that snowboarding did not prepare me for surfing anyway. So I don't see what the people are on about. Like, snowboarding is snowboarding.
Well, it's a board, isn't it? It's a technique. Yeah. You should be ahead of anybody
else.
It
doesn't feel the same. It's not at all. Not at all. But yeah, so we were super lucky. So yeah, we didn't really work. We just sort of hung around Val d'Isère. Had a lovely time.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah. Now, when the snow started to melt, we were like, okay, we need to plan our next move. And that was meant to be boats and yachts. So he, really annoyingly, he just literally just logged into his online profile I can't remember which agency it was, but he literally just logged in. He didn't update anything. He just logged in. On the same day, he had two calls from a captain's offering him jobs. He accepted one of them. He was gone by the end of the week.
To be fair, like, he was in the game when I was there, so he's got loads of experience.
I was then panicking because his job was starting immediately. Like, he left. So I was left in Val d'Isère on my own. And I'd spent quite a long time. I'd already got my STCW and the medical one, whatever that is. ENG one. I got that before I left for Val d'Isère. So I was prepared and I got together a good CV. I was ready to go, but no one was calling me. Yeah. No one was calling me. So when he snapped his fingers and he was gone, I was like, oh, this is going to be tougher than I thought.
What age were you then?
I was 35. Yeah. So then after a couple of weeks, I left Val d'Isère and I just flew to where he was. So I was like, I'll just dock walk where he is. At least I know someone. So I flew to Palma and I walked around in the rain because it rained the entire time I was there. Mm-hmm. And I dock walked, came up with nothing. I had quite a nice time. I stayed in an Airbnb because the crew house was full. He was obviously staying on board, but we would see each other in the evenings. He was in a shipyard period there. And then his boat was moving to Saint-Tropez. So I figured I had a booking at the Grapevine. So I was going to go to the south of France and just try my luck there. So his boat left. I flew to the south of France. And I think I just made myself such a pain hanging around his boat in Palma that by the time I got off the flight in Nice, I had a call from the captain of his boat saying, okay, I've got 3 weeks of day work for you. If you come to Saint-Tropez, I can give you some day work. I was like, thank you. So I think, like I said, I just made myself annoying hanging around his boat, I think, for long enough. So I went straight to Saint-Tropez. I had 3 weeks of day work, but with day work, you don't get bored.
Was this to say in Saint-Tropez?
So I had an Airbnb in the centre of Saint-Tropez. Yeah, I didn't make any money. The money I was making on day work, that I got food during the day. Obviously, I got fed during the day by the chef. But yeah, the rest of the money went on my accommodation and food.
I would not.
It was a really nice apartment.
No, I guess it was really nice. Yeah. I don't know.
I actually stayed in two different places. The first place was about a 20-minute walk out of the port of Saint-Tropez, and that was like a ground floor, self-contained part of someone's house. Really nice. And then the second one was an apartment above a restaurant in the centre of Saint-Tropez port. Yeah.
Which sounds really cool.
Yeah. And
mega expensive if you're only doing day work.
Absolutely. I didn't, like I say, there was no money left. Put it that way.
It's experience.
It was, because I had those 3 weeks of day work that I could then put on my CV. By the end of those 3 weeks, I had a call from a captain on a boat in Dubai, and I was off and I went to Dubai.
So he's staying in Med.
Yeah, yeah. So we knew that we'd have to do time apart. We just knew, like, he's got all this experience, years of experience, and I don't. So we knew that we'd have to do time apart so that I could build up experience. And then once you've got some experience under your belt, you can start being a bit fussy about the jobs that you take. Whereas initially, you can't be fussy. You can't be, oh, can my boyfriend come along? It doesn't work like that. No. Yeah. And he was a first officer on board, but he still didn't have that pull to be like, oh, I want my girlfriend. And we hadn't been together a crazy amount of time either. So yeah, we knew we'd have to do some time apart. Actually turned out we only did 3 months apart, which was a lot less than we thought. We thought we'd do a whole season. I went to Dubai for 3 months and my job was permanent. I could have stayed there, but after 3 months, I got a call from him saying someone's just walked off the other boat because he was part of the fleet. So someone's just walked off the other boat. I've told them about you. Answer the phone if they call. And I was like, yeah. And a couple of hours later, they called. I'm like, so yeah, you might be interested in a job on board. And I was like, yeah. So yeah, and literally a week later, I was back on my way to Saint-Tropez.
Back to Saint-Tropez.
And then I had a job on board, like the sister boat to the one he was working.
What do you think? What's your impressions of Saint-Tropez? Because obviously it's a very unique place.
So I really have a lot of fond memories there. So I do love it. I think it's a really special place. My initial, you know, I did live there for quite a significant amount of time in the end. Like our boats would go out, but it'd always come back. And I actually lived in a crew house. So I was land-based there. But so I do love it. I think it is a really special place. However, I do remember my initial feelings when I got there. I remember when I first went to Saint-Tropez and I saw all the money and all the lavish lifestyle and the people that brings, and it made me a little sick. Because I guess I hadn't been around the yachting industry enough and I wasn't desensitized to it. Yeah.
The wealth.
Yeah. And I just looked around and I was like, the good you could do in the world with what you have, the resources you have. And it made me a little, it just made me sad and sick. But unfortunately, you do get super desensitized quite quickly. And in a way, I justified it in my head by that they have created a lot of jobs and opportunity for a lot of people. Like, it's a huge industry. The people that build the boats, the people that manage the boats, not just the crew. And so we're all feeding our families and boosting economies with the money that we get paid to do those things.
That's the age old. That discussion, regardless of whether yachting exists or not, is the structure of our world. Mm. There has always been the wealthy, the powerful, and then everybody underneath.
Yeah.
It is an interesting thing. It's like a friend of mine's asked me to go to India.
Yeah.
And I want to go, but that's the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I've had friends come back from India and to see that kind of poverty, that kind of suffering. It's the other end.
Yeah.
And then obviously you go to somewhere, it's just war, money's just dripping off everybody.
Yeah. It's super interesting subject. My good friend, we've been friends since we were four. She's born in London, but her parents are from Sierra Leone. And it was only a couple of weeks ago, she was over at my house and something came on TV or while we were together. And and they'd gone to the same village that her family were originally from. She's never actually been, like I said, she's born in London, very British, but they were talking about Bow, the village in Sierra Leone, and she was like, oh, classic white people going to see all the poor black people. She's like, she just doesn't sit well with me. They go into visiting the schools and visiting building wells and things like that. She was like, I just don't like it, just don't like it.
So do you think she thinks that they shouldn't go?
Exactly.
So not need to go to a place like that because it's different to where you're
from. And that's what I mean. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, I don't know. I get what she's saying. She says, oh, they come and they stare.
It's tourism.
Yeah, they come on holiday and they look.
But again, it's that thing. If you can't see, I'm not trying to say this. It's like aquariums. So I went when I was a kid to SeaWorld. Mm-hmm. I saw the killer whale that's
in
the
movie. Yeah, me too. Yep.
Best time of mine.
I'm ashamed to say the same.
I
loved
overwhelmed with how incredible the creatures were. And to be that close, I will remember that for the rest of my life. Is it right?
Shamu, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, it's something with a K. Was it Shamu? One that ended up killing
two. Exactly the same.
So it's one of those things. So I now through having that experience and being that close, if I see something on a nature program about killer whales and like protecting them, I've got, when I was in New Zealand, I live with and work with people that ended up going working on sea shepherd, and like I now understand a lot more. It's that whole, if you don't go, you've got no emotional connection. So like, I understand that your friend would probably find it offensive that people are just gawking at the poor.
Yeah.
But then if you don't go and be moved by that, you're not an advocate to get that removed,
yeah,
or change that scenario. Because if you can't see it, it doesn't affect you.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
It's real tricky. It's tricky.
Because I see both sides.
In the UK, we've got comet relief.
Yeah.
Comet relief was started not long after. It was like Live Aid and stuff like that. So it's this TV program to raise money. It's generally a lot. They do tons of work in Africa. It's not solely. But they ended up getting into trouble because obviously they'd send celebs over there to tell the stories of, yeah, you know, what it's like to live in a village with no well and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously, because they're, we can connect with the celebrity and then the celebrity is telling the story.
Yeah.
They raise money.
Yeah.
And then we send it. So then what money would be raised if nobody went?
Absolutely. I see both sides.
It's tricky.
Because the other side is, what, are we, should we just stay ignorant and not go and see these things? Just think that the whole world is low weight and we have it. That's not right either. So
it's also that you can only send a person, say, for instance, your friend that's got an emotional connection to that place, to report on that. Does it make it more complicated? Do you know what I mean? Than it needs to be. I think it's, nobody wants to offend anybody, but people do care and they are sympathetic and empathetic. But then say, do you know what I mean? You're not helping the cause.
No.
But it's also when you go to somewhere like Saint-Tropez, Dubai as well.
Yeah, and Dubai's exactly the same.
Obscene wealth.
Yeah.
Do you go around the street, turn to take everything off? It's like, you need to share.
Yeah, and I think Saint-Tropez, because it's so concentrated, because it's a tiny little fishing
pole.
It's tiny. And then they shoehorn these huge mega yachts into this tiny little port, little fishing village in the south of France. And so it's so concentrated and it's so obvious. Like, these yachts are taller than the buildings opposite, yeah, you know.
And it's very picturesque, very cute.
It is.
There's a lot of showiness. You pull your boat onto the back on that. You want to be seen. There's a lot of to be seen. And then obviously that's not all the beach bars around there are places also to be seen. It is a... Like I said, it's the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. You know? And I think as yachties, you do get desensitized to it because it doesn't shock me the way it used to. I remember that feeling, and I don't feel like that anymore.
You're exposed to it, so you're not shocked by it. And then obviously that always leads into the fact that when you come out of the yachting industry, you're used to. I joke about on this podcast all the time about cleanliness and being OCD and trying to make everything look nice. If people could see the other side of the camera, what my daughter has done,
yeah,
on the other side, how embedded that gets to you, that you want that kind of style look.
Yeah.
But that's not your life.
Yeah.
You were exposed to somebody else's life. It is a tricky one. So, you know, this is a good billionaire because he offsets his carbon for his mega
I used to say,
if you added that and then his flight logs, and do you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
they're never going to say that.
The owner of this boat's really nice because he thinking the amount of staff he probably has 300 members of staff, but he knows our name. He knows our name. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. He remembers our name. Like, what? You think that's a good thing? Yeah, he bloody should know our name. I give him food every day.
Well, yeah, it's only, if he was anybody else you were serving in a cafe or whatever, it's like, if you saw them every day, you'd expect them to kind of know your name.
Yeah.
It's no different. There's lots of enigmas within the world of yachting, but it's nice to hear people's first impression.
Yeah, and I do also, I remember the first super yacht or mega yacht I ever saw in real life. And I do remember that moment. It was in Palma when I was dog walking. And although you dog walking, you see them, I remember this was the first one that, like, a big yacht.
Over 80 metres.
I think it might have been roughly that. Oh, no. Am I allowed to say boat names? I never worked on it.
Yeah.
Here comes the sun.
I am.
How big is that? I don't know. It's pretty big.
Yeah.
It's pretty big. So I remember standing at the bottom of that and going, whoa. And that's the first time I'd ever seen a super yacht up close like that.
You know, you're hooked though, because you get, I remember going down the International Quay in on Teve, and Princess Olga came in.
Yeah.
And she was brand spanking new at the time.
He was like, that's a nice yacht.
And I don't know, she was probably 80, maybe a bit more. She was big.
Yeah.
And she's not obviously the biggest.
No. They get so big now. Like, you're just a number on those ones.
That is, I found my stride in the 60, 70 meter mark. I didn't want to go down to 40 meters again. It's just that perfect amount of crew. I don't think I could have worked on a massive one, because then it just becomes a bit cruise ship.
Yeah.
Because once you start putting in rotation and everything else, like, it is literally like working on a cruise ship, which suits some.
Yeah.
But I think closeness.
And I had an eclectic. So I think so the biggest I worked on was 99 meters. But then the last job we had before we left, we went onto a small boat, so that, because he went in as captain. How big was that? Can't remember now. Small. I have 5 cabins.
Okay.
We were sole crew.
That even, you know.
Yeah, I think it's 20-something.
27.
Mm-hmm. 27.
It's still decent.
Yeah.
A few million quid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it was 4 million or something. But yes. So I had I did the range. And obviously, mega yachts are our motor. The last one we were on a sailboat. So again, that comes with this whole new spectrum of problems when you're on a sailboat. Everything moves.
I never went into the
cooking in a galley then when you're off side on. It was interesting.
So what was your, obviously you're quite late to the game in stew terms.
Yeah. So I was never really a stew. I am a terrible cleaner. Absolutely terrible.
You didn't put that in the CV though.
So initially I wanted to be on deck. I'm an outdoor girl. I like camping. I like snowboarding. I like being outside. No, so the thought of me being trapped in a laundry room, like, I would rather hang myself.
It's a bit extreme.
Yeah. It was just like, I just don't think I would have coped. I would have withered away and died. I needed to be outside. So I was like, I want to be on deck. I want to be on deck. So I went to Flying Fish on the ROI, did my deck hand course. I was the only girl doing the deck hand course. And then when I initially went out and I started dock walking, I got told by 2 different captains of different boats that I should stay in my lane, be a girl, be a stew. And I was like, nope, no, refuse. So I started to get really disheartened, and I thought I might have to start to compromise somewhere. And then how it initially came about is my CV was very deck orientated, all about being outdoors and doing the, like I said, trained at Flying Fish to be deckhand. And I was initially walking around. I was walking around this shipyard in Palma, and a guy, he was on board the boat that was on a dry stack, so he was high up, and he leant over and he was like, "Are you looking for work?" And I was like, "Yes." He was like, "Can you cook?" And I was like, "Yeah, like, I'm a really good cook, actually." He was like, "Come on up." He gave me an interview and he offered me a job of chef on this sailboat. I did consider it because I had no other offers going. But after talking it over and the itinerary and the other people that were on board, I just didn't think it was going to be a good fit. And I didn't want to accept it just to leave them in the lurch a few months later. Yeah. So I didn't accept that job. But it was at that moment that I was like, yeah, you know what? I can bloody cook. Maybe this is where I compromised. I don't think I even changed my CV, but when I got that call from a captain from a boat in Dubai, it was for a cruise ship. And he had decided that he liked the look of me and thought I'd be a good cruise chef. Because like I said, my CV didn't really hint to that. So yeah, I took that job and I went out and I was a cruise chef. And from then, I was chef the whole time after that. And when we got the job on the smaller boat where he was captain, I was chef. But because it was just me and him, like that did mean that I would have to change some beds and clean a bit.
Only you.
Yeah, which was not my favorite part of my job at all. But it did also mean that I was outside a lot because it was just the two of us. So he would come in and he would set the table, for example, while I was cooking. And so you'd get to do a bit of everything. I think if I was solely inside just cleaning, I wouldn't have survived at all. It's just not, you just have your strengths and that's not what I am super tidy and I always have been. I'm like almost to the point of OCD, like I will piss people off. I've also lived on my own as well. So I am used to like where I put things down is where I expect them to stay. So like when I come back, they should still be there.
Right, yeah. And then,
so I will like slightly move the remote so that they're in line. I'm that kind of, I'm super, super tidy, but actually cleaning is not my thing. But I can cook, so I got away with it.
That's one of them.
I can plump your pillows.
It's not many people that have a joy in cleaning, to be honest.
I think some people really like it.
I do making things, but then people come and wreck it. You know, it's one of the problems with this house.
And then you just give up in the end, I guess.
So I really like it when my husband goes away.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And then my house just stays the way that I want it.
I do think there is so much. I think it's really important. I'm sorry if you're not one of these people, but I think it's really important that everyone lives on their own at one time in their life, because you do really learn how you like things without the interaction of anyone else.
Yeah. And then you have to learn how to compromise, which is really fast.
Yeah.
But so you were late in. When did you start thinking about leaving? So
I think it's down to my partner. I guess I'd had my experience. I'd had a really nice time. It was quite short-lived, only a few years, but I'd really enjoyed my time. And I'd got back on my feet. I cleared all my debt. Yeah. That didn't take very long at all. Once I was yachting, it was like, great, clear all the debt off. I could come back to the UK with a nice clean slate and I could sell my house, which would then give me a deposit for another one. Like I was in a really good position. So it had served its purpose. I had done what I wanted to do. I traveled and he had been in the industry a lot longer. And I think he had got to that point where he was like, I just want to go home. He's got two sisters that had a kid each and we'd come back for visits and they wouldn't know who he was. And I think that was tough for him his nephews to not know who their uncle was because he was never around. So I think he was just getting to that point where he's like, yeah, I want to settle down. I want a house. I want to be, roots. Exactly. And because I had a whole life, and luckily we are from the same area, so I'd had a whole life before this, so I've got friends, real friends, and family as well in the exact same area. Although I went gallivanting for a few years, my friends still stood by me.
Yeah.
So I've got something to come back to. All my friends are not surrounded, not in the yachting industry at all. They are all, unfortunately, they're all in this real small pocket of the world.
It's a blessing because it's one of the things that's quite lonely when you come out of the industry.
Yeah.
Your friends, your really good friends, most of the time live all over the planet.
Exactly. And so I do feel like to come back was super easy because I just slot right back into my friends' groups and things. The only trouble was the work situation. It's okay, now what?
What am I going to do?
Yeah, I honestly didn't have the strength to open a studio again. And I really didn't. I felt like that would be going backwards to do that again. There was a whole chapter of my life that I absolutely adored. And I have such fond memories. And it was an amazing chapter. It's time for the new one. And I felt like if it was, I announced that I was coming back, everyone was like, oh, you can open a studio again. I'm like, no. No. And sometimes I wish, sometimes I think, oh, it would be nice. But it is only a fleeting moment that I think that because I think it would spoil it because it was so amazing. before.
If the world, obviously, for those of you not in the UK, if it was good for business in the UK, you could be lured into it, but it's not great for any businesses.
No, right, it's still, it's definitely still not risky.
The time to start a business.
And having been from a successful career, and me and my ex-husband, we were on track to be finishing our mortgage in the next 5 years. Having to be in such a very comfortable position and then to lose everything and go completely the other way and be in a huge amount of debt with no way of paying it back, and then and to claw back from that, as I don't want to risk doing this again.
No.
I can't do it again. Before I left, we officially left the industry, it wasn't a last minute decision. It wasn't like we're done, walk away. There was a planned step by step. So a couple of years before we left, I started studying and training around work from abroad to be a functional health practitioner. So that is, it works alongside a medical model. It's designed to get to the root causes of issues. So you go to the doctors, they'll treat your symptoms, but it's what I do is I ask, why did you get that in the first place? Let's address that so it doesn't happen again. And it brings everything together. So you go to the doctors for this one thing, but he hasn't asked, 2 years ago, you had this other thing. They're actually connected. No one's looked at that. I would. So it's bringing everything together. And because of my career before as a fitness instructor, I could get people fitter and stronger, sort out their nutrition, and maybe they'll lose a bit of weight. I did all that before, but actually, they were coming in with chronic fatigue or ME, and I wouldn't know how to help them. I do now. And so it ties everything together for me. And the fact of working as a chef and seeing how food is crucial. People, when I would cook for people there on holidays, there was no holds barred, but it was just free for all. But seeing if someone was staying for a few weeks, they'd say to me, oh, actually, I haven't been feeling great because of all this alcohol and all this food. Maybe if I have this, so yeah, I can do that. Or I can offer some little bit of advice here and do this for you. And they're like, yes. And then they get better. I'd be like, the power of food. And then all my knowledge about the human body from before. And then I found functional health. And I was like, oh, this ties everything together. It ties lifestyle, food, nutrition, exercise, movement, muscles, body. It ties everything together. Now it makes sense. So I trained in that while I was working abroad. And then what that would look like when I came back, I didn't really know. And I think I didn't really decide straight away. We left our boat in the May. We went on lots of holidays, like back-to-back holidays for a while. There, we didn't buy a house to live in until the July. Even once we bought it, we were away a bit. We weren't really in it. Then we renovated it. And so I think it was, probably November when I was like, okay, need to actually
earn some money.
I start working now. I'd done bits and pieces, but not really anything. So yeah, then it was just the end of last year that I was like, okay, this is what I do for a living. And I announce it, or I do the whole social media thing, which I bloody hate, but annoyingly you can't seem to
actually find anybody nowadays that's
yay social media. Oh yeah, it's such a drain on my life.
It's really interesting. I'm the worst. I'm literally been, I feel like I've been in hibernation for the last few months because there's so much changing what we've been doing.
It's a full-time job to do that.
It's also like, what, for me, it's like the headspace of putting yourself out there. What am I saying?
See, I don't mind that so much. It's the admin around it. I don't like admin. I don't like, if I can outsource something, I will. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position where I can outsource entire social media right now because of cost. But if anyone wants to do it for free, give me a call. It's the actual admin side. Speaking on camera or putting some content, like just getting the content, the raw content, fine. What I do after that, and then all the writing and the post-it, winter post, who are you trying to get? Oh, I just don't care. But it's so hard to have any sort of business without it.
No, you've got to. It's part of the functionality.
Because even when I had my studio before, I didn't really feel like I had to do the whole social media thing because people did it for me without even knowing. Like my clients were my advertisement. So they would come, they would take their pictures, they would put them on their social medias and tag Tiger Tone. And so it went.
Yeah.
I didn't have to do anything. They did it all, especially when you get in that huge amount of football. That spreads. It's so easy. I spent most of my time reposting. That's all I did. This is the most amount I had to do with social media before.
So now you're back and you're both back.
Both back.
So was it conscious that you both jump at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah, we were sticking together. By that point, we'd got married. And I guess we leaned on each other. Coming back is we have nothing. He didn't have a house before. He's been in the yachting industry. So he didn't have the stuff or a house, and I got rid of everything. So we're starting from scratch. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to be a bit later in life and be like, oh, I don't even have a bed. We have nothing. And we bought the house, and I remember the day we moved in, we got the keys and yay, all the house. And I made some lunch in advance because I knew that it was going to be like a busy day. And I didn't, you know, if I don't eat every few hours, I do get quite angry about it. And so I made this lunch in advance, and it got to the point, right, I'm hungry, let's eat this. So we just sat on the floor ready to eat this. Didn't have a knife and fork. Didn't have any utensils to eat with. Nothing. So I'd made this like chicken salad, I think it was, and we found one lonely spoon amongst our stuff. So we shared the spoon to eat the salad with.
We've got colouring now, then.
We got colouring now.
That's a win. So it all seems like it's working.
Oh, so far so good. Yeah, we're really happy with where we live. It's just our house is the best. We're so happy because we renovated it as well. So it's exactly how we want it. We're so comfortable. We're right around family and friends. He started his new career, which again was strategic. He started that journey before we left the boat. So that's going well, and then mine is, I was a little bit behind because I'd spent quite a few months once we got back to the UK not doing anything other than going on holidays. So yeah, but it is going in the right direction. I could definitely be busier, no doubt, but it is working, and we have some really nice plans for the future. And so I just think we're so happy now, and people say, oh, all the time, people say, don't you miss it? Especially when it's a rainy day, like a grey British rainy day. They're like, don't you miss it? And I'm like, no, I actually don't. And I'm not saying I won't ever miss it. I look back at pictures and I'm like, oh, that was a lovely day. I can look back at lots of things and think how amazing they were. And I don't miss it yet. But you could ask me in a year's time and I might say something different. But no, I don't miss it.
I miss the salary. That's probably about all I miss. I could really do with that salary.
Yeah. But you didn't have that much time to spend it.
No, you didn't have that much time to spend it. But no, it would. There is my addiction to packing bags and buggering off started like when I was 19, and it only got worse. So I do. I miss
the travel.
Yeah, just the packing the bag and interestingly, off on your own.
Interesting, that's the bit I don't miss yet. We traveled so much. And so we were averaging like 9 countries a year. I think last year alone, I took 20 flights in a 12-month period. And it's just meant I'm constantly living out of a suitcase. For years. And it's incredible the amount of flying that happens when you work on a boat.
Yes.
There's a lot of flights. And so the last time I got on a plane was September. And that's the longest amount of time that I haven't seen an airport. Is that right? Yeah, it might be. And I bloody love it. Like, I love that I haven't seen an airport. Like, the thought of getting on a flight now is, such a hassle.
Yeah. Flight on my own. Like, a flight now with a child, husband, child, and my child. It's slightly more stressful experience. So long way it continue.
Yeah.
If you could give 3 pieces of advice to somebody who's considering going on board, what would your advice be?
I'd say definitely do it. If you have that itch, do it. You won't regret it. But it also depends on the stage of life. So I think my one piece of advice would definitely be just live a little life first. Don't use it as like another mum's house. So I would say, if you want to go to uni, do uni, do that, or get a job, or like just travel, or just do those things and then go work on yachts. So I think that would be my first bit of advice, is
cut the apron strings.
Yeah. Live some life. Learn what council tax is. So I think, that would be one bit of advice. Advice 2 and 3. Don't just take the first job that you get offered. It has to be the right fit. It does not look good if you've been looking for work for a few weeks or a month or two and you get offered something, don't just go yes, because you're desperate. Because if you end up leaving pretty soon after, that won't look good either. Although you shouldn't stick around at something you're hating. So if you do need to do that, do it. So yeah, just think about it. There is always going to be something else around the corner. So as I said earlier, I was tempted to take that first job that I was offered, but I did turn it down. And thank God, because I did run into I saw the boat in the Med last year, the year before, saw it hanging around. And I was like, I didn't know, I got offered a job on that. And but like seeing where it had been and who was, I was like, no, I'm so glad I didn't take that. So yeah, and then third bit of advice. I'd say plan your exit. Unless you can just go home, which was not an option for me. Like, my mum doesn't have room for me. She hasn't had room for me for a very long time. She doesn't live in the house I grew up in, so I don't have a bedroom or anything. So yeah, just walking away, I'd say plan it. Start working on something before you leave, so that you have that exit strategy and it's not so tempting to just go, I'll just take this one little contract, just one more season. So unless you are willing to just walk away and go back home, and if that's an option for you, then fine, I guess you can figure it out from there. But then you are so more tempted. As soon as you get annoyed with parents or whatever, you will be tempted to go back again. So I do think it's make decisions and see them through, figure out what it is. And whatever you decide you want to do afterwards, doesn't have to stick with that necessarily.
No, one of the bits, like what you think you will be doing when you're ashore, probably won't.
No, but you just put it's the stepping stones, yeah. Right? You put something in motion and you try and see that through,
yeah.
But it could lead you somewhere else. And that's great. You don't have to, whatever you think you're going to do is very unlikely. It's going to look the way you thought it would.
No. Probably very hard to find that, but I'm sure they do exist. But no, it never turns out.
There's always exceptions, isn't there?
It's been fabulous talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me, because I do think this platform, this media that you have created through Yachts, Pals and Wisdom, and I just think it's amazing that people like me can come on and talk about, you know, our little story. And then I think that'll just be helping so many people out there. There'll be people that want to get in that will probably find value from, they'll hear someone and be like, oh, that's just like me. Or there'll be people that want to get out and then hear something
just like me as well.
And they'll be like, oh, yeah, if they can do it.
Yeah.
So I thank you for creating this space.
We've got to go on. Because I do, the reason why I like it is because all the stories are amazing. And where women are just so self-deprecating that they just don't understand how tough and resilient you have to be to get in and to get out. It's really tough, but it's worth the ride.
Yeah, and I think I said that to you in a text, didn't I? Like, my story's like full of determination.
Because what's the alternative?
Exactly. You have to truck on. I found myself with like nothing and in a huge amount of debt. What am I supposed to do? Just roll over. You have to find something. Yeah.
So do you have finally a crazy story from your time on board? The weird, the wacky, the scary, it could be anything. Just the moment that you're just like, what the hell just happened?
Oh, how careful I can be with what I say. I guess there is a time that sticks out, and it's not something so much that happened. It was listening to a conversation. Because obviously when you're on board with guests, you hear things in their lives, and their lives are very different to us. I have actually often wondered this. I do have a soft spot for watching like the Kardashians and stuff, but actually I always think I watch that because their lives are so different to mine. So I'm wondering, does it work the other way? Would the one percenters like to watch a reality TV show of me emptying the dishwasher? Because our lives are so different.
I was just going to say.
No,
I can't imagine. No offense to you, but I just don't.
We never know. We should ask.
Interested they be. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, their lives are really different. So I do remember this one time I was hearing this conversation. It was between the boat owner and his son. His son was in his 20s, not a small boy. And so we're on his yacht, and he has several yachts. Then some of them were hanging around as well, because he liked to sit on one yacht and look at the others. So we're all
on a float to boat.
Yeah, I suppose. So we're sat on his yacht, and he had a call, which I hadn't heard the call, but he'd had a call to say that the pilot of the jet, his plane, had an accident at the airport. He'd basically had a travelator accident and had really cut his face open bad, like he was going to need surgery and things. He was in the hospital. And because of the kind of jet he had, they were struggling to get another pilot, and he had to be in Bologna the next day for lunch. And so he was complaining to his son. He was like, I can't believe the bloody pilot has hurt himself. I'm not going to be able to go to lunch. This is a disaster. And they can't find another pilot. And he was going, oh, oh, oh. So then the son was trying to come up with solutions. He was like, why don't you take the helicopter? And he's like, no, just won't make it. It's too far. And he was getting like more, oh, woe is me. Like, no point did he talk about how this poor bloody pilot that was in hospital. And in the end, he was like, see, he was like, this is why we always should have a standby pilot. Like, we're going to. So he's, I'm sick of this. So he phoned the management company, I assume, I don't know, people who look after the plane. And he was like, I want a permanent standby pilot for the rest of time. So this never happens again.
Oh, my God.
And I remember thinking, wow.
How much do you reckon that costs?
Yeah, so now he already has the pilot, because he couldn't find a pilot. Because I don't know how it works, but when you're a pilot of a plane, you're only licensed to fly certain planes. Like, you can't just find any pilot. It has to know that particular plane. And they couldn't find one.
Yeah. A different plane?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Obviously, I know he's like emotionally attached to his plane.
I think the son did say, well, charter. And he was, yeah, so he was like, oh, I don't know, there was a reason why that was inconvenient as well. So yeah, so the solution was he was then just going to pay someone to never fly his plane, but just in case they needed to, they would be ready to fly the plane. That was the solution.
That is, it's a bit like my husband having two lawnmowers.
Yeah,
I'm not really.
It's not the same scale.
Or why we got two lawnmowers?
Just in case
one
just
did break.
Yeah, there you go.
He never wanted to go through that experience ever again.
One is in the gardener's hospital. The other one is ready to go, do the job
on standby.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the shed.
So I guess that was some.
Do men change? The money, just the amount.
Yeah.
Men don't change. Yeah. Just their standby option slightly changes compared to how much money they've got.
Yeah.
It's like what you're saying. He was sitting on his boat looking at his other boat.
Yeah.
But then it's like
the whole fleet would have to go out so that he could be on one and look at the other.
It was like having two cars or three cars.
Yeah. And there's that famous quote Will Smith said in an interview that he said that when he first got famous and he bought these really nice cars, he showed his dad and he's like, Dad, look, I've made all this money. Look at these real nice cars. His dad goes, you've only got one ass.
It's true.
So yeah, I guess that's a story. I can't say everything. You can't give away too much about who and what goes on.
Wow.
Then there's the classic, I'd be sent in a crew car, like a crew car, to go all the way up the coast to buy the ice cream because they run out of ice cream on the other boat. And like the amount of carbon footprint you get from bloody ice cream on the board.
Is there an amount of writing off?
No.
There's a write-off.
Yeah. Or like sending the plane back to the UK to get the Harrogate water to bring it back to the South of France.
They had an Eco Warriors guy on a debate show on telly the other day. And obviously, somebody was up in arms. I think it was Meghan and Harry talking about saving the planet and all that kind of stuff. And like one flight in a private jet, like return flight, I think, would equate to one person, a normal person's carbon footprint for their own whole entire lifetime.
Really? Is that true?
So the average worked out that how many flights they did. I don't know how many. It was like that. It just worked out that it's an impossibility for an average person, even with maybe your holiday a year, to even compete with the amount of private jets, even if they go on commercial, let alone talking about the cars that they drive, the boats that they have. It's just impossible. So who should be curtailing their lifestyle?
Yeah.
No, it's us.
Yeah.
They need to take my log burner away. I'm wrecking the planet.
Yeah.
It's all my fault.
It's all your fault. And as I always say, it's like turning up to an earthquake disaster with a dust pan and brush. What are you going to do?
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you.
We will have you back on again to talk about
hormones. Because that's basically what I spend my life talking about.
I have to say, it's an intriguing topic.
Well, it's a big one. It is a biggie.
Now being 44, so obviously my hormones are on the way out, or I don't know what they're doing.
Oh, whole new ones are coming in.
They can just bugger off, really.
It's an interesting time.
I'm sorry, Rob.
No, there
was a reason why I tried to make sure that I didn't know anything about it before it turned up.
Yeah, sometimes ignorance is bliss, but
why would you want to know? It's just in the business. There's so many other things about being a woman which aren't great. Why would you add it?
I think being proactive and preventative is very helpful, actually. Mm. So that it is an easier time when it happens.
And there are things we can save that joy for the next episode.
Yeah, I could teach everyone how to collect your progesterone points.
I shall be drinking wine during that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not doing it sober.
No, fine. But yeah, I do spend most of my time talking about hormones now
Can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited about learning about where my hormones are going. If you have enjoyed this episode, dear listener, we've got obviously lots of episodes already recorded and we've got many more coming along. Thank you for listening. Our website is under construction at this moment. We're going through a little bit of a revamp. So we will have a lot of resource on there. Obviously, Nat's details will be in the bio below, but we'll allude to what she's been up to a lot more in that next follow-up episode. So until then, have fun and I will be back soon. Oh.